Hello and welcome to episode 264. I did it again of the
I really like the way you said episode comics
podcast.
Oh.
It's funny because I don't know if you listened to the last episode, Alex.
I sure did.
We did two takes of the intro because Chad's audio fucked up for once, but I also said episode in the intro, in the original intro, and then I corrected myself. I don't know where that has come from.
Because you're thinking of like EpiPen and EpiStein.
EpiStein.
Well, that's not how that is pronounced. But, you know.
Is he like is he a spokesperson for EpiPens? Is that who he is?
I also, I really generally don't know where it comes from. Anyway, I'm Jean-Luc, the host of the Comics Podcast. I'm joined by the lovely Chad.
I have a decree to make.
Yeah?
Drinking light beer that's under 100 calories isn't drinking.
Okay.
Because I had one today and I'm not counting that for my number this week.
Good for you,
buddy.
Because
there's like no alcohol in there and there's barely any calories and it's better for you than a soda. I had that over a Coke, and I feel like I made the right decision.
Well, Chad, most things are better for you than a Coke, just to, yeah.
I don't disagree with that either, but I'm just saying, like, it was only 90 calories, man, like.
Damn.
You're also hearing the voice of the returning and stunning Alex.
Yeah, I woke up and I was canceled, and it was like, okay. So then I went back to bed.
It happens to the best of us.
I went back to bed, listened to some comics podcast.
Yeah. There's a new ContraPoints video out today, so, you know, canceling isn't again.
Nice.
as per usual. And we, you know, we settled the dispute. We got a new contract signed. And now Emily can appear on the show with Alex, so she's here as well.
You know, I'm not going to let you forget that in the scrapped intro from last week, you also said thirth instead of third.
I did do that. That was also a mistake. I get tongue-tied. I still, you know, 5 years into doing a podcast, get nervous when I do the intro.
It kind of sounds a bit like Old English. So you're like thurf, and you know the other word you said with an E that I don't even remember now, but I found it.
Episode.
You should. Episode. When you get nervous, you should just do like Chad and I do and drink alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I am having one tonight because I like you guys.
Aww. What you drinking, Chadley?
I'm drinking the bourbon I've been drinking for a while now.
I don't think that alcohol is something that you drink when you're going to talk to people you like.
Hold up.
It seems more like, to me, it's more of a like, oh, God, I have to spend an hour with these people, they're gonna make me want to drink.
It's also like you might not be comfortable drinking with everyone, but Chad feels comfortable drinking with us.
That's true, and saying
things, and you know,
you're approaching this wrong, Jean-Luc, because like I like to drink with people I like because it's fun.
Yeah,
and I like to drink with people I don't like because it makes them bearable. And I like to drink when I'm alone because I have a problem.
The many facets of Chad Waller.
I am a 20-sided die.
Damn.
You sure are, buddy.
Almost all the sides are one.
Jesus.
Fuck, I'm funny tonight.
Damn. Yeah, you're popping off.
Wow.
I gotta hate myself more. It works really well.
I have a 20-sided die where the one should be. It just says fuck.
Nice. That's good.
It's pretty good. It's also like made out of metal, so it's like a pretty weighty die. It's very nice to roll.
Damn. I like that we're getting some die background on ourselves.
If only this were a die episode where we had an issue of die to talk about.
We could talk about some die feel, you know?
But while I was gone, the thing that I wanted to share with you guys was I went to go see a movie, right? And I went to this movie, and I don't want to talk about the movie. I do, actually. I quite enjoyed it. But after the movie, I was hanging out with my friend Lakshay and his girlfriend and our other friend Kenneth. And we were guessing, like, when's everyone's birthday? And I guessed that she was born on the 23rd, and she was born on the 23rd. And then they're like, oh my God, how did you know that? And then they're like, okay, what month? And I guessed May, and it was May. So that was just, it's the peak of my life. I guessed someone's day and month of their birthday. So, yeah. Maybe that's a source of, I need to reevaluate, but I was pretty happy.
Did you not know your friend's birthday?
No, it was my friend's girlfriend who I just met for the first time.
Oh. Well,
but I also did not know my friend's birthday. Like, I asked, they were like, oh, when's our birthday? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. So.
When's my birthday?
You're a summer boy.
You got it narrowed down to one of 3 months.
See? He's a summer boy.
All right, well, close enough.
At the end of the show, we'll reveal Jean-Luc's birthday.
Moving on, what was the movie you saw?
I saw The Vert Knight.
Oh, I thought this was last week, like something you were going to tell us when you missed the episode last week. Okay.
No. As of last week, I didn't have anything to tell you guys. I was like, wow, nothing happened. But I'm glad this did happen with the dates and everything. So,
Alex, here. I have really bad news for you.
Oh, no.
Jean-Luc's birthday is not in the summer.
It's summer.
Summer adjacent. I think May is summer.
May is definitely a spring month, boys.
But I did say May. You hear that, folks? You hear me say May before anyone else said May? So
I just want to make sure that you know that May is a spring month.
I would say April's a spring month for sure, but May, you know what? I would say at least a quarter of a summer month.
May is when summer blockbusters start coming out, and therefore it is a summer month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do live and die by movies in the theater, so
yeah,
I guess that does make it a summer month.
I was dead from March 2020 to May 2021.
He hath risen. But yeah, I went to the theater and I did not die. Well, yeah, I guess.
The Green Knight.
You saw the Green Knight. I also saw the Green Knight. I saw it today.
Damn, whoa. What a coincidence. I also saw the Green Knight.
Well,
Chad,
we knew that.
Say the line. Say the line, Chad.
I saw Tenet.
Yes. how was Tenet, Chad?
It was all right. It was fun, but it was kind of stupid.
Nice.
It was like a James Bond movie, but with like a sci-fi hook and less sex appeal.
I mean, Robert Pattinson had a lot of sex appeal.
It was like a James Bond movie, but with like a black person.
I guess Washington and Pattinson don't actually fuck in the movie, which is a mistake.
They do a lot of eye fucking, I would say.
Yeah, but if they do a lot of
some verbal sparring.
That guy was Robert Pattinson?
Yeah.
Not the black guy.
That's why he was familiar. He did a really good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert.
But see,
Robert
in a Bond movie, they would have fucked, and they didn't do Tenet.
Well, no, because I don't think.
Well, right, the guy who made Bond doesn't like.
But Bond movies aren't brave enough.
It's very true.
Not yet.
I mean, like the thing is, I when I saw that movie, I didn't think I'd really remember or like care about it much in like a month or two. But I still love the term temporal pincer move. It's one of my favorite words or one of my favorite phrases.
I say it all the time.
Yeah.
Just, it has replaced, like, pincer movement. I just say temporal pincer movement.
Yeah, you know, you're gaming with the friends.
I like temporal bowel movements.
Damn. Yep.
It also does a very good job of getting at how nonsensical that movie is. It rocks.
It's a great line, though. It is
a great line.
I had fun with it.
Nice.
I think it goes on too long, but so does every Christopher Nolan movie.
There's a great movie hidden in there somewhere. And if I were a film editor, I would try to edit it down to about 90 minutes and make it, but I'm not.
I don't think the first 20 minutes make any sense whatsoever, like character motivations, anything.
But there's action.
And you're just like, it's like, oh, it's sort of like when you're watching Transformers, like, hey, turn your brain off and enjoy it. I was like, okay, I can do that.
Christopher Nolan's like, Saturday. What?
It's like the opera scene and then he's on.
It's the Russians, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just can't remember because everything happens twice. So I can't remember if that's actually how it opened, but yes, okay.
I turned off the movie at the 60-minute mark, and it was over.
I should start doing that with more movies.
Yeah.
It's not the worst strategy.
I'm glad I didn't do that with The Green Knight, though, because I enjoyed the tale it told.
Yeah, The Green Knight has a great ending. So
I would be fascinated by what movie you would get if you turned it off at the 60-minute mark.
It's based on an ancient, you know, Arthurian poem, and it's just like such a, the journey this guy goes on is just so unglamorous, and like things are happening around him that like if he was telling this story it would like wouldn't be as intense, although, you know, he sees the Attack on Titan people who don't really care about him, like that's a cool moment, but like, you know, he like runs into bad, he like gets tricked by a guy and can't fight them off, and you're like, yo, you know, I think I feel like a knight could have fought them off and beat them, but he has such like a hard shitty journey, and it's just like It was fun to watch.
Had either of you read Gawain and the Green Knight before this?
I have.
I don't read.
Okay, well, Chad, You don't count because you have not seen the movie yet. I'm speaking
Chad, you count. We love you, Chad.
I love you, Chad, but you've not seen the movie, so technically you can't really speak on the movie, can you?
No. Oh, I just, I wanted people to think I'm well-read.
you are well-read, Chad.
I would say a bit more of a... No, never mind.
But John, had you
I haven't read the original, like, poem, but kids' version of 8, yeah.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Interesting how they made that into a kids' thing.
I don't remember a lot about... I mean, I remember the plot, sort of, but I don't remember a lot of it. But a lot of my exposure to King Arthur is... I had, like, a big book of all of the, like, King Arthur's that had been adapted for children. That is my exposure to it.
I took a college class where I was assigned the Green Knight, Gawain and the Green Knight. Did not read it. I managed to take a test about it and did not fail, but did not read it. So I had... I mean, I remembered, like, the very bare bones of the plot, but did not know very much going in. I quite enjoyed this film.
Yay!
What about y'all?
Is the ending the same as, is it a straight adaptation of the poem, basically, like, in terms of the story beats, or how does that add up, line up? I guess you haven't read it, Emily. I don't know why I'm asking you that. You just told me you haven't read it.
No, I was going to say, I am aware they did sort of change the ending. John, how does your
The bit where he takes the like sash off, the belt off is different, yeah.
Yes.
It's I mean, also the whole bit at the end where he sees the ultimate like he sees future. The premonitions. I don't remember being in there.
But I don't think it is.
Yeah, other than that, like it was pretty similar. I mean, obviously this is a much I would just say edgier version than I was familiar with.
It's a much more A24 version. Yeah. Like I hate that A24 films have that sort of reputation, but that is sort of the exact vibe that this movie has.
Yeah, I mean it definitely fits into the oeuvre of like what people think of when they think of A24. Like it's a lot of like sort of long shots, very like sweeping vistas, like it's shot and edited that is very like, you know, I hesitate to call it A24 house style because it's not like they're commissioning these movies. It just turns out that these are the movies they like to buy and distribute.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting, pretty shots that like have a lot of landscapes.
Yeah, the movie is absolutely gorgeous.
Cinematically, gorgeous. Like every frame a painting. Like. Absolutely incredible to look at.
Yeah, no, yeah. Which is not a big surprise, given like, I mean, David Lowery, who's the director of this, also made Ghost Story.
Yeah,
which is a very similarly shot, kind of like haunting in a lot of ways. I don't know. It was funny because I wanted to talk about this movie on the last episode, but I knew Alex was seeing it. And I knew Emma was planning on seeing it. It was kind of funny. Because last week it would have dovetailed, I think, really nicely with last week's issue of Department of Truth, which was about a guy who wanted desperately to believe that there was, you know, some kind of wonder in the world. And I feel like this movie hits on that a little bit thematically, which I really enjoyed. I mean, I love the scene where he sees the giants and they walk, and he has like that brief interaction with the one, and they just sort of walk on. I love the talking fox.
Yeah.
That also reminded me. I didn't remember that being a thing in the original Green Knight. But I was like, oh, maybe it was, and that's where the inspiration for Middle West came from. I didn't really know, but because the foxes looked very, very similar. But I loved that side of it. And the kind of like constant sense that there was like something else going on behind the scenes. And Dev Patel, obviously a lot has been made of his performance, which is as good as people say.
100%.
I think a lot of this movie, a lot of like where this movie grabs me is just in terms of its style and visuals. It's a very very different sensibilities, but it reminded me a lot of like Nicholas Refn movies in that way, in that I love how it looks. And the things that were happening on the screen were, like, compelling. I found the character compelling, but it wasn't, like, you know, knocking my socks off or... I wouldn't say that, like, the character development or plot arc necessarily, but I was just so swept up in the more technical side of it, in the visuals and the sound, that it was just a really, this is a movie, like, I'm so happy I saw it in it, right? Like, this is not a movie that I think I would have gotten
same experience with. I am so glad that this is my first theater experience since...
It's a good one.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Nice.
This is the first film I've seen in theaters since Sonic the Hedgehog.
But both visual treats, definitely.
In different ways.
I went with a couple of friends, and we were deciding between Space Jam 2 and The Green Knight. And I was like, guys, can we please see The Green Knight? And they're like, I don't know, Space Jam 2 might be fun.
Alex, like, can we please see it? Me and my brain-damaged friends are trying to schedule a time to watch Space Jam 2.
It'll happen. Like, that's not a movie where spoilers are going to hurt. Not this one either. But yeah, it was such a enjoyable quest where there was, like, tension sort of throughout, but, like, also... not really a moment where I feel the tension got, like, I mean, yes, at the end when he's doing sort of the flashbacks or the flash forward, the premonition, and, you know, the sort of ending, quote unquote, ambiguous scene. But it's just this guy trying to, you know, find a purpose or, like, you know, prove that he's great and have that moment of greatness. And his journey is just miserable. And I loved how sort of un-Arthurian and unsort of, like, glamorous it was. All the way through, and then his sort of decision at the end, and it was really cool. Also, I love the Green Knight guy when he gets his head cut off and he's running away from the castle. Very Sleepy Hollow-esque. That was a really cool moment.
Holy shit! There's a translation of this poem by Tolkien.
Yeah,
I'm not shocked by that.
Is that like the 200 page version or whatever it is?
No, it's actually shorter. It's 66 pages. The other one I found was translated by Jesse Weston, but this one is super, like, sing-songy in the poetry, where it's like A A B B C C D D rhyme scheme, and I don't like it. And it's like, there's no way this is the one we read in college, because this is reading almost like it's easy to read. It's super bouncy, and the language isn't super dense, but it reads like baby's first poetry, kinda. That's a little mean, but it's not my favorite translation of this. And now I'm looking at Tolkien's, and it's like, here we go. This is better.
Good old Tolkien.
Cool. Well, yeah, we all saw the same movie except Chad, but three of us saw the same movie.
I'll see you next year. It'll be fine.
Also, to briefly follow up on something that was brought up last week, I finished Centaur World, and it was very good. I don't really have much to say about it. I just wanted to put that there, that I liked it. And right.
No
and
more cartoons
that.
This week.
I've already tried to sell Chad on it, and maybe I can get him to watch it, but he has not yet, so...
Not yet.
Stay strong, King.
Other than
I
liked it...
I'm almost caught up on Owl House, but I didn't, so
Owl
we
House,
can't talk about that.
Owl House is technically, I would say, better than Centaur World on...
I saw The Suicide Squad today.
Yes, I would
How
love
was that?
To.
Speaking of refined taste.
I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Yeah?
Aww.
I mean, my favorite part of this is, I just find it so funny that, like, they plaster all the marketing. This one quote from a review that's like, James Gunn has redefined the superhero blockbuster once again. Which I guess means that he just made Guardians of the Galaxy, but... the songs are from decades other than the, yeah.
So
I don't
you
know.
Are selling me on this,
huh?
You are selling me on this.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, James Gunn has made like one good movie in his entire career.
Scooby-Doo one.
Well, I would say the second one is a little better, but you know,
is that still James Gunn? Monsters
Wait.
Unleashed.
I thought so. He might just have produced credit.
I mean, I like Monsters Unleashed more, but you know. I didn't think he did
wait,
it.
Wait, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the soundtrack from Monsters Unleashed is so good. Oh,
yeah, Monsters Unleashed is not a better movie.
Love Shack. Baby, Love Shack.
It is a better movie, and that's explained by the fact that it's not directed by...
Ah, damn. Okay, well...
Sorry, no. Like, the first Scooby-Doo live-action movie is leagues ahead of Monsters Unleashed.
Oh, Emily. I've never disagreed with anything you've said on this show, but I like Monsters
Unleashed,
too.
I watched those... just a few years ago, recently, and, like, no.
Damn.
Like, the first one is way better.
The first one is also not directed by James Gunn.
James Gunn has not directed a movie until Suicide Squad 2021.
So. No movies until then.
No, double check.
I am actually double checking to make sure I'm right about that.
No, he's definitely directed movies. Don't worry.
Yeah, he definitely directed. No. I knew he directed movies, but I was double checking to make sure he directed Slither. He did.
Oh yeah, he did direct Slither, I believe. Yeah.
He did direct Slither. The Suicide Squad, like, has some fun stuff in it.
Yeah.
Very occasionally it's funny, but it's very, like, it's like Marvel. Well, actually, you know what? It's like Deadpool cringe funny, which is, you know, MCU style banter, but they can swear every now and again, which if you're into that, I guess you're into that, but it really, and it, in terms of like tone, it reminded me a little bit of the Birds of Prey movie that came out last year, but it saps like all of the heart out of it and just feels like the most forced like studio movie. Like, we had to make like an epic meme James Gunn move, like a needle drop every 5 minutes.
Man, it's a good time for needle drops.
It's a bad time for needle drops, man.
I mean, in terms of
unless you're doing heroin.
Ayo.
It's really, yeah, it relies really heavily on having a strong cast, but almost none of them have any chemistry with one another. So
how's Mr. Polka Dot Man?
He's fine.
Oh, nice.
Like, he's fine. Like, he's like a psycho, you know, serial killer with mommy issue. The first time they do that joke, it's funny, and they beat it to death over the course of the movie. It's too long, which I think should probably go without saying. King Shark is good, though.
Yay.
King Shark is the closest this movie gets to having an emotional core, and instead it treats him like a joke all the time, even though like it's the closest thing the movie has to a character who actually like has personality, despite like this version of King Shark being very much like he's basically Groot.
Interesting.
So
that's kind of disappointing. I love
King Shark. It's not the King Shark from the Harley Quinn cartoon.
Who is incredible.
Who is very, very good. Yeah, it's not even remotely close. Speaking of Harley Quinn, feels like a total afterthought in this movie. Like, the studio told James Gunn, you have to put Harley Quinn in it. And he begrudgingly said, fine, and signed the, like, six-figure contract.
That kind of, yeah. Even looking at the trailers and stuff, it seemed like she wasn't, like...
Really, well, it is sad because Margot Robbie is great in that role, and she...
Yeah, really, think, like, really she totally owns it.
Yeah, I think really proved herself in Birds of Prey as well, that, like, you know, it's not, like, kind of proved that, like, the AR Suicide Squad move was, you know, was genuinely a fluke in terms of her performance as Harley Quinn, because she was great in that movie. And she's good here, like, she's clearly, like, giving it her all still. But James Gunn has, like, an interest in, it's cool to see Starro, I guess, in a movie theater. The crowd's reaction to Starro was fun. But it's just, you know, it more or less is just another, you know, MCU style, with no heart. Feels very corporate, very, like, you know, very forced, right down to the classic, CIA propaganda aspects of it's good when U.S. Special Forces teams knock off, Latin American dictators. So, I don't know. Did not really have that much fun with it. Thought it was okay, but no, wasn't that into it.
Sorry to hear that.
It is really funny that they've made Peacemaker, like, the face of the Suicide Squad in the comics, though, considering that this movie very plays him as a joke. Not a particularly funny one, but in a meta sense that this is the character they think they're going to be using to sell comics.
That's John Cena, right?
That's John Cena's character, yes.
Yeah, he's been popping up in a lot of things,
yes,
comic-wise.
Yes, that part of it was funny, but it's not a very good movie. So, that's the Suicide Squad.
That's very funny because I had a visit from my sister today. I don't know if I've ever said on this show that I have a twin sister, but...
You have!
She came in and briefly visited me today, and she and her boyfriend saw Suicide Squad last night, and she was telling me that I absolutely have to see it.
Well, yeah, wow. I mean, it's a movie that normies are going to love because it's...
She watched the Snyder Cut more than once, apparently, which... still, I cannot wrap my head around, but...
This is significantly worse in the Snyder Cut. The Snyder Cut at least has some, like,
interesting
genuine artistry to it.
Interesting.
In a way that I respect, even if I don't like. You know?
Okay.
So, this is just, you know, but it's the exact kind of thing that, like, normie audiences are gonna love, and it's fine. It's not, like, the worst movie I've ever seen or anything.
Yeah.
But it's just like the, you know, it's the same corporate slop that gets thrown on plates and shoveled
sure.
into movie theaters and streaming services, you know, twice a month. And everyone goes out and laughs their asses off in the theaters and talks about what a great time they had. And it's, you know, I don't want to be, I want to be clear that I'm not begrudging people for having that experience with those movies.
Like, oh, I mean, yeah,
it's
like,
fine that people
look,
like
my,
them.
You don't have to. I don't know if you're trying to spare my feelings, but my sister likes tons of bad movies. I don't give a shit if you're...
No, it's not just specifically that. It's just more of a general thing. Like, it's fine
yeah.
that people are enjoying these movies and having
yeah.
those experiences with them. It's just that, like, it only becomes... It specifically becomes frustrating when these movies are become the monoculture.
Yeah.
And the Suicide Squad definitely feels like a part of the monoculture when, you know, this weekend there are... You know, you could have gone in. There are so many options in theaters, from The Green Knight to Old to Nine, which is a movie that opened this weekend. Or I think it's called Nine. I can't remember the name. But there's, like, tons of movies that are in theater that are, you know, more going to give people an experience that is going to... That I think, for even for the average audience, is going to be a more interesting experience than just watching the same regurgitated slop again. So... It's just, it is what it is, but...
I really appreciate listening to last week's episode that someone brought two kids in to see Old.
Just... Dude, like I said, that shit rocked. Good for those parents, man. I mean, bad that they didn't remove the crying child.
It kind of reminds me of my experience seeing Pan's Labyrinth at a young age, where I was just, like, not prepared at all.
I definitely saw Pan's Labyrinth before I was enough to see Pan's Labyrinth.
I watched Pan's Labyrinth at a sleepover.
That seems to be, like, I feel like that's a good, like,
understandable
way to do
it. It was a good way to watch it, honestly.
Yeah, well, where it's like, it's not at your house, probably, or maybe it is at your house, but parents aren't really watching what you're watching. Yeah, that's the classic, like, oh, I went to a friend's house and saw, like, an R-rated movie. Although I think Pan's Labyrinth is just 14A, but...
Yeah, Pan's Labyrinth is the most hard PG-13, or among the hardest PG-13 in.
I don't know how he did
yeah,
it.
Yeah, dude sews his fucking, like, cut open mouth together just on camera.
Yeah.
And the child dies at the end, like, in a brutal way, and it's like, ah.
It does admit, you know, I genuinely think that if Pan's Labyrinth came out today, it would.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. That movie's great. Like I said, we are at a half an hour.
I know that we're at a half an hour, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up that last week we didn't talk about the Willow Smith album, and Chad, I know, has also... listened to and enjoyed the Willow Smith album, and I've been enjoying it quite a bit recently, so I don't know, I wanted it to come up because we didn't talk about it last week.
Yeah, we can cover that real quick. Let me pull up the track listing.
John, you listened to the first track. Do you ever listen anymore?
Well, I listened to the whole album.
Okay, I couldn't remember. What did you think?
It's very clearly influenced by a lot of bands I really like, and from, I said this to you, but early Paramore.
Oh, for sure.
To, like Riot Girl bands, like Bratmobile that I really like, and even like, there's even some, like, Refused in there, which is weird, but, like, some of that is, like, very, like, there's some stuff that is very clearly, like, comes from the Shape of Punk to come.
Yeah.
But I didn't really care for the actual album. It has a lot of, like it's a really great, like, it's a really interesting mishmash of a lot of those influences. But none of it really stuck with me. Like, lyrically, I sort of just, nothing really resonated with me that much. And it was just one of those things where I listened to it and went, that's neat, and just haven't felt the need. So, not in theory my thing, but in practice, not so much.
Well, I liked the album. I've listened to it a few times since, and I think it's pretty obvious that Transparent Soul, which is the single for the album, is, like, far and away the best song on the album, which I guess, a smart move to make that your first song also.
I kind of disagree with that. I feel like her singing in that song isn't great.
What do you think is the best song?
I think Lipstick's really good. There's something... Okay, I like Grohl because it has Avril Lavigne on there, even though it's actually kind of a weak song. But I'll...
Okay, but it rules also.
The Fuck You song's really fun just because it's clearly them dicking around in the studio and someone recorded it.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
And they just kept it on the album. And I think those kind of flavors, because this album is definitely like... It's got a bit of grit to it. It's got a bit of like messiness that I think really works in its favor that the Olivia Rodrigo album does not. That one is really like pop influenced, where this one is coming with a wider breadth of influences and embracing the genres that come with that.
There's definitely more
sonically more interesting.
There's definitely more edge, more tooth in this album than the Olivia Rodrigo album, for sure.
It certainly feels less manufactured. Like, this feels a lot more, this feels a lot more like genuine artistry to me.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, again, it has the same thing where it's like, you're Will Smith's daughter, shut the fuck up about having depression.
Hey!
You know, like... You were a fucking millionaire the second you were. I don't care.
Okay, but
problems.
Like, people can still have depression. Like,
yeah, you can fix it with your millions of dollars. It's very easy. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not interested in hearing about how rich people are sad.
Oh, sure.
She's singing
but
for our audience.
I would argue that
it's
not
pop punk. Like, come on.
You're not being forced to listen to it. Like, I mean,
no, I'm not.
You could argue that I'm forcing you to listen to it, but like, I mean, you know, like she's making her own music. Like,
yeah, and it, yeah, I
appreciate that rock music is kind of coming back into the mainstream, but in a very interesting way because it is, it's Willow Smith, it's Olivia Rodrigo, it's Billie Eilish, to an extent, Machine Gun Kelly and like Modsun, like people that metalheads and like old school rock fans are like really kind of angry about. But these bands and these artists are getting songs on the radio, getting like actual guitar music back on pop stations. And for the most part, they're women and younger women. And I'm really curious what the genre is going to do, where it's going to be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, maybe even less than that. One of those YouTubers I was listening to, he had kind of a funny joke. You know, what's the Olivia Rodrigo to Infant Annihilator pipeline? Because people are going to listen to this music and go, oh, I like this more than I thought I would. What else is in this? And then eventually, you know, find harder rock music. Like, I mean, that's how I found metal music, right? I didn't jump into it. You start listening to Linkin Park or Slipknot or something and then progress from there. And so these are interesting gateway artists to harder rock and roll music and possibly metal music from there, depending on, you know, the person.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. We'll see. You want to talk about some comics?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Cool. Where should we start?
That's a good question.
How about The Me You Love in the Dark? Just because, why not?
I was
Scotty Young. Number one?
I was also going to suggest this, so good job, Chad.
Once again, Scotty West comic drawn by Jorge Corona, who also drew West, and not actually drawn by Scotty Young, which, similarly to Middle West, I feel is appropriate.
Yeah, for sure. I really like this one, though.
So do I.
Had a great start. I love how kind of quiet it is, the reoccurring joke about the house being haunted. And you, of course, you know it actually is haunted. It's an image book. But the way it happened and where it happened in the issue, I think, worked really well. And I was just like watching this artist kind of like struggle in front of a blank canvas. I'm like, oh, I get that.
Yeah, really liked this book also.
Yeah, it was a good first issue. I mean, it has like a hook we've seen before. It's a struggling artist with some supernatural stuff on. It's very Image Comics in that sense. It's definitely the kind of book that writers love to write. But it's a really good take on that, I thought, and I agree with definitely really agree with Chad in the sense. I think the way that this builds towards the heavy scare quotes reveal, in fact, haunt, is really good. I do also enjoy that it's like a kind of a low-key haunting. It's not, you know, this isn't Kill or Be Killed, where the demon is making her, like, go on murder sprees, which, you know, if that's more your speed, there's a comic this week for you. But it seems a little bit more low-key than that, which is kind of nice. I mean, we'll see going forward how far this book leans in the horror side.
Yeah, I don't think that the stakes are going to get that high, but I do look forward to where this book goes. I like the aesthetic, also, I like the art.
How the ghost is talking to her is really similar to how I have the ghost in my current book talk to the main character, as Alex can attest.
That's exactly what I was just going to comment on. I'm looking at the page where it says, "I'm sorry," and I was just waiting to interject with, Chad, it brought me back to that, and it was, like, in a creepy way, like, yeah. I also really like how they draw the music coming out of the box sort of white brush stroke sort of going up. Kind of looks like piano keys in a curvy way, but I really like Scotty Young books. Like, I like reading them, and I might not, like, enjoy every issue, but it's something that he definitely has his own voice, and I generally like it.
Yeah, I agree with that. For the most part, I do think that Jorge Corona's art kind of suits this book tonally a little bit better than in Middle West. Middle West, but I feel like here a lot of the shadows and this, like, really hard line work is a lot more suited to the story of flail artist. I like that it has a lot of edges to it, and I like the, like, constant, like, enriching shadows repaid, which I feel like were like characteristics of his art in the West that didn't suit the sort of whimsical tone of that book one. But really, really good work from. So it's a solid first issue. I'm excited for more. I guess we can, since I sort of, we can talk about Lucky One from Cullen Bunn, which really is just, you know, kill or be killed.
So
but
this guy's getting cheated on, and then he, like, gets a demon, and then he, like,
and he becomes the Joker.
But it's such a weird way of showing it, where it's like, it feels like it's not actually, like, it feels like it's all being retold to us, but it's a very exposition-y way of telling things that you can just, like, show us, and it's like, then he got powers, then this happened, and he's telling it, and we're watching it at the same time, and it's like, why don't you just, like, you don't need to tell us, because we can see it happening.
Yeah, it's so weird that they have this framing device where he's, like, telling an AA group, like, what he done. It just makes the whole issue just feel like it has, you know, too much writing in ways.
It feels like a retelling really that, like, but like a retelling that's not very, like, it feels like it's retelling to, it's an information dump, and it's like, okay, but why do I care about this information dump? And there really is no reason. I don't like this guy. Like, this guy who's just like, I mean, feel bad for him, really.
You also would definitely get the sense that he's a pathetic loser without the exposition telling you, you know, every third page, right?
Like, yeah.
Oh, but John, his girlfriend is cheating on him, and it's so sad.
Well,
it sucks that his girlfriend. Yeah, it does suck that his girlfriend is cheating on him. Like, you hate to see that from a friend.
He should make, like, a porno and just watch.
Well,
I mean, or like, or he could, like, break up with her.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, the way that this issue treats his relationship with his girlfriend, I think, is particularly shitty, even though, like, everything that happens to him is, like, undeniably, like, awful, right? And I think that, like, there is an element of this that, like, lots of people feel this way because in their day-to-day lives are awful, and there's very little sort of positive feedback, and, you know, a desire for, like, something more meaning. And this guy, you know, just so happens to pick up a demon that lets him murder, which is very much like the story of Joker 2019. I don't know. I just feel like the execution on this was really, and it's not like the concept is that good either. I will say some of the art is phenomenal. There is some, like, some of the moments, the one that stuck with me the most is the old woman getting eaten by the subway doors. I thought was drawn beautifully.
That level of, like, cartoon violence,
yeah,
could work so much better. Like, it could. There's a good comic book in this art style and this idea. This is not it.
Yeah, I wish it was a comedy,
and I wish it was fucking going ham on stuff. Like, if Scotty Young were writing this, it would probably be at least entertaining, and you would be like, I'm excited for the next issue because I want to see who dies in what goofy fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel sorry for this douchebag. Like, he's just, they laid it on so thick where I'm just like, fuck him, he's boring.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a compelling protagonist. Like, there's not enough work done to make him, like, a protagonist I care about and want to follow. But I do feel bad for it. I mean, he works a shitty job, his girlfriend's cheating on him, and he gets possessed by a demon. And then has an exorcism that goes wrong. Like, the guy's life is in fucking shambles, right? Like, I feel bad for him in that sense, I guess. But yeah, I think that this book sort of takes the wrong, like, it doesn't do enough to make him a compelling protagonist. Like, there's that bit in the middle where he's like, I was so consumed by all the guilt. And then the next page is like, damn, I wish I could just fucking kill again when he's not being possessed by the demon anymore. So it's just, I don't know, just not, there's nothing really in there. And
yeah,
it's just not, I also like, really dislike the ending about him starting a cult. I feel like that is the wrong direction to go in terms of scale on this book. So, not a super great issue.
Yeah.
No, I definitely won't be going back to it.
Yeah, me neither.
Speaking of, I'm not going to go back for Trover either.
No?
Did you guys check this one out?
Skipped it.
Yeah, it's good. So, it's written by...
What was the name of this one?
Trover Saves the Universe.
Oh, no, didn't...
From somebody involved in Rick and Morty.
Well, it says Justin Roiland, and I was like, oh, I like him. He does the Rick and Morty. But I don't actually... I don't think he wrote this. I think he just did some work on it.
It's written by somebody named Tess Stone.
I've heard it's the fucking name awful. Tess Stone before, but I don't...
One of the co-creators of Rick and Morty?
Maybe so.
It's trying to do a lot of, like, anti-capitalist stuff, but... And you can tell, like, it's trying to be influenced really hard by Rick and Morty. Like, the characters kind of talk like Rick and Morty. But then there's so much writing. I don't even know how to, like, explain what goes on in, like, the 8 pages I read before I said this sucks and I'm done.
Tess Stone has done some other, like, graphic novel type stuff. That's not relevant to this.
It's super, a lot of, like, exposition, a lot of, hey, the framing of this is going to be, I'm telling you a story that I think you already know because you were there, you remember this. Like, it does so many things bad comic books do, and then it's not funny, and then really just messy. I don't know. It sucked.
Well, that's unfortunate. We hate it when ones suck.
Yeah.
Did you guys think that Suicide Squad Get Joker number 1 sucked?
Book of the year. The book of
I didn't
the
read it.
Year.
I didn't
Did you
like
actually
it.
Think it sucked?
I didn't like it.
I liked where it ended. Like, just from a, like, oh, that's kind of a cool scenario where the Joker has the bombs for all the Task Force X members. And it's
I
like,
mean,
oh,
okay, fine.
That's kind of fun. Like, this issue, I was a bit on, mostly because they just kept on bleeping out the F word. And I know it's not like... technically
so
like a bad
dumb.
Writing thing, but it just
it was
irks
so dumb
me so much seeing
what's
it
the
so...
point of what's the point of spinning out this thing that you call Black Label where you put all your edgy comic books and you still censor the fucking swear?
It's like Black Label for 13-year-olds, like, yeah. But what's
also I don't know if you guys noticed, but the F word does make it into the book one,
which is this like a PG-13 thing where like you can have one F word in the whole movie, or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
You like this, John Luke?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was heavily carried by Alex Maleev on art, who is a frequent collaborator of Ed Brubaker on like a lot of criminal stuff. I think his art is fantastic. Just really, really heavily shaded. He has a really great style for these kind of like, grimy street level comics. And I think that like every page looks fantastic, especially like when they go into the bar where they frizz. Like I love like the lighting there, and the bar is drawn, the background is drawn. So I like that element of for sure, like the villain and all.
Also, it's another new Joker that like looks kind of nice and unhinged. So it's like okay,
yeah. The design on the Joker is a really good cross between a few of the good parts of like the Jared Leto Jokers visually, and the more classic like Batman 80 style Joker. So I liked that a lot as well. But it's definitely got the Brian Azzarello problem of just trying so hard to be like superheroes should be taken seriously by adults. So that's that. Yeah. That side of it's not so hot.
I think it definitely starts Azarello's off like definitely that.
Done better.
Yeah, he's done worse.
He's done worse. Yeah.
But yeah, I just really like where it ends, and it's like, oh, as much as I didn't love this issue, I'm like excited to see what happens in the next issue.
It's also like, I don't know, it's got like a very bare bones sort of like, you know, action movie plot, which I feel like is executed on like fairly well here. Like there was nothing in here that I'm like, this is terrible, other than the bit in the helicopter with the guy talking with the one character.
Oh, you mean the guy that was at the insurrection?
Yeah. That I thought was rough, especially like, and I don't know, like there are definitely like, you can, you know, make a case that superheroes should comment on current events. But that one felt really contrived, especially given that it makes the timeline make no sense with.
Yeah, it felt very ham-fisted.
Yeah, especially, yeah, it felt very, yes, definitely. And also not a string that the book pulled on at all afterwards. Yeah,
not at all.
Like something they're like, we have to put this in here because we're serious, we should need to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not the worst thing I read. It was fine. I'll probably read this. It was just long.
What do you guys want to move on to next?
Did I convince anybody to read Joker Presents a Puzzle Box?
I thought
I read the first one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was this Joker book. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were two. No, that is
okay. So I guess Chad's the only one that read it, huh?
I like the concept of the Joker like telling the story from his perspective.
That's the only thing I really liked about this book is like whenever it was the Joker telling like his side of the story and he would like give dialogue to the other characters and it was obviously his perspective on what was happening. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny and I actually, as much as it pains me to say that I enjoyed a Joker book, I actually kind of enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was cute. It's a fun gimmick that worked, at least in this issue. Looks like there's six. They're very small.
Yeah.
Like 8 to 11 pages apiece. I think that's short enough to carry this through. Or like, oh, the Joker is being a doofus and pissing off, you know, the Gotham PD, right? Like I can deal with that. That's a decent hook for a short set of comic pages. I had some fun with it. I probably won't read the rest. I don't know if I liked it that much, but you know, if it's your thing, like yeah, it's not worth checking out. I think
I just wanted at least one other person to read it because I did actually kind of enjoy it. So I needed some validation, even though like you're not gonna read any more of it. You still thought it was like all right.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of Nice House on the Lake, number 3?
I think I liked this issue more than issue 2, which I was not huge on.
Yeah, issue 2 was, I don't want to say confusing, but it definitely, I was still getting used to how they were structuring the story.
Yeah.
So this one, I think, was a lot easier to follow. I really like the puzzle elements. I'm still like just in love with the concept of this one.
Yeah.
And I've been having it. I think this comic so far is fantastic. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really liked it too. And it's just nice that James Tynion has like somewhat consistently ascended to being a great writer. Like, I mean, obviously Department of Truth, but Joker's pretty good too, and this is quite good as well.
Yeah, James Tynion's having a good year.
Yeah, I just hope he doesn't Tom King himself, you know. But he's not a CIA agent for all I know. So that's a 30 points for
him. As far as we know.
Jean-Luc, you still here?
Yeah, sorry. I liked Nice House on the Lake. I mean, I liked the last issue, I think, more than the rest of you did, but I enjoy the sort of, like, rotating every issue has a new V character.
Yeah.
You know, that reveals something new about, I can't remember the name of the guy who said this.
Walter, I think?
Walter.
Walter yeah. Disney.
Yeah. I think that it's Walter Disney.
Darn.
that sounds right. But I really love this has been consistent, but I love the flashback in this where I think it's the name of the character whose perspective we see it's Sam. And yeah. Sam is somebody who actually got the sense that Walter was, you know, nudging his life in a certain direction and controlling him in a certain way. So it's sort of interesting to see where Like, the mystery here is, to, like, where that goes. Like, to what end does he have them staying here?
Yeah.
Because it's not just that he's, like, wanted his friends to survive through the apocalypse and cause. I have to assume that there's more to it than that, but what we're slowly getting.
Yeah.
But I really like this issue. I thought this issue had a much much more concise, like, actual narrative arc than like, the first one was obviously, like, here's the concept, here's this one character. But this one, like, was very clearly had, like, an arc for, like, a story that wanted to tell an arc for this character of, you know, he wants to figure out what's going on. And the end realization that he's just, like, he was given a puzzle to solve by Walter because Walter knew that he would want a puzzle to solve is a very good end reveal.
It's nice to, like, read a comic or a story and just not have, like, any idea where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Like, there's something, like, so fresh about this in the execution, and I'm just like, normally I can predict a step ahead, maybe two. This time I'm just like, I have no fucking idea where the outcome of this is going, and I'm really excited to just continue along for the ride.
Agreed. Got a couple other things. Did you guys read Porcelain, end up getting around to Porcelain number one?
I did.
Maria
Lovett's Porcelain number one.
Yeah, once I was able to find it, yes, I did read it. I don't know, not that much happened. Like, the art was kind of cool.
That's kind of a pattern in Maria Levitt's books, it seems.
I don't know if I've read any of her other books previous to this.
It was like the cult one, or like the really horny one with the blue guy.
Oh, that's her.
Yeah. She was the writer and artist on Luna as well.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same person. That
yeah, that's part of why it's not. That's part of why I pulled it because it's not published by any of like the big publishers you read books from. But I figured I'd pull it because for all its faults, Luna was something that I came away, you know, overall positive on, sort of. This similarly, yeah. I think, has a really good start, like a really good first issue that really grabbed me. Really super easy to read. She's got a great sense of not overburdening the comic with words and just really heavily on. Like, the whole conceit of the issue is that it's, you know, a girl walking from her home into town and she, you know, stumbles upon a, like, a dollhouse along there, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, it's very much just, like, drawing in the setting, and you don't really, I love it's one of those where you, like, you don't really know what the setting is. It's vaguely maybe post-apocalyptic, but you just see her, like, walking past these sort of, like, shanty tents and ramshackle buildings. It's all really well drawn. Makes the world feel really lived. And then when you actually she gets into the dollhouse also, is the book sort of plays its full hand of being a sort of, I guess, kind of like a horror, having a horror aspect to it. I dug this. I thought that it was a really good first issue, and I'm excited for more. Hopefully it goes in a more positive direction than...
I'm a bit skeptical because of what Luna was, where sort of similar opening where I was like, oh, this is like an interesting concept. Then it like just meandered for so long, and then the last issue they were like, we're gonna fit it all in. But yeah, I mean, on its own, it's like, oh, this was enjoyable to read, great art, and kind of creepy at the end. And there's a cat, a good boy cat that saves the day at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll come back for the cat. Like, it's one of those things where with the last house, the nice house on there, like, I don't know where that's gonna go. Where this, I was like, kind of like, oh, I understand what kind of story this is. She's gonna go, it's gonna be a dollhouse. And, you know, like, once you see all the dolls, you're like, oh, I know what's gonna happen to her. Someone's going to try and turn her into a doll. The execution's pretty good, though. I do think the artwork's good. I think the mood and the tone of the book works pretty well. It's creepy. I like the cat. So I'll show up again.
I don't suppose anyone else is reading Crush and Lobo. Probably just me.
No.
Is it enjoyable?
Yeah. Yeah. It's still good. This was issue 3 and still good.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Did you guys read Swamp Thing number 6?
Heck yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I say heck yeah, and I was just, well, I don't like the Suicide Squad guys. I mean, I liked Tom Taylor's book last year, but
I'm tired of them showing up in things.
I haven't even watched the damn movie yet, and I'm like, come on, please, no more Suicide Squad. And it's like, a lot of the time, the same members, it's like, like a very pretty book, good
flashback
stuff.
They totally do not fit this book.
No, what are they doing there?
Okay, like, I agree. I don't like that the Suicide Squad is in my Swamp Thing comic. That being said, I think that this book does a sort of decent job with it.
Sure. I mean,
the best parts of this book are the parts that don't feature the Suicide Squad, which is this is about Swamp Thing sort of being rebuilt and Levi going through green and re-experiencing some of his memories. And that stuff is fantastic. I mean, it's Ram V, so it makes sense that it gives me Death of Layla Starr vibes, but it's definitely in that oeuvre of, like, reconnecting with people and the places you live. That stuff is all fantastic. The Suicide Squad stuff I thought was largely inoffensive. I mean, I don't give a shit about the Suicide Squad. But
they keep showing up in things, yeah. And it's getting kind of annoying.
Like I don't know, it's like, could you just put someone else there? Like, they don't really, their presence there doesn't really do all that much.
In
what's happening. No, I understand the flame guy throws some stuff and the guy falls down the waterfall, so, like, technically he does move him in a physical sense. It's like, great. And I love seeing Kemo. He's just like a big green, you know, toxic waste thing, and it's, you know, it's cute, but yeah.
It definitely feels like an editorial directive because the movie is out.
Yeah.
But also, it feels like it's setting up an arc of Swamp Thing hunting the Suicide Squad through the jungles of India, which I think could be. I really, you know, I love the cliffhanger at the end of this, which is Suicide Squad, which is Swamp Thing popping up out of the water behind one of the members of the Suicide Squad. And I hope that we actually get to stick with that and he just, like, starts fucking them up this issue. That would be cool, I think. But I agree. I feel like there's definitely shoehorned into this story.
Yeah. I've become so cynical about, like, villains dying who are known that I'm like, oh, man, sure. they're not going to kill Mick. He was a popular character on the TV show Legends of Tomorrow. He's safe. And, I mean, if that guy's safe, everyone's safe. So hopefully I'm wrong.
All right, well, let's do one more and then leave, because we're at 1:03, and I'm actually going to hold you guys to the time.
Wow. Well, what is it going to be then, the last one?
I read Basilisk 3 and thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Basilisk has been all right.
The better Cullen Bunn book this week.
Oh, God, was that the same guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
funny too,
this book has actually been very good consistently.
And I was like, man, I don't like Cullen Bunn. And then Jean-Luc is like, well, he's 1-for-2. And I was like, oh, Basilisk, yeah, let's read that one. It's like, oh, yeah, this book's still pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
I like the weird religious aspect coming in where, like, oh, they leave someone alive to basically become obsessed with them to a, you know, a cultish degree. And obviously the main character wants to kill them, but the hinting at the other one, like, someone actually showed up and it's like, do you want to worship them? And it's like, oh, I don't know who he is, but I like this twist. I am intrigued.
Yeah, I love that angle of it too. Especially, I mean, we've only got what, 2 or 3 issues left. I think this is only a 5 or 6 issue mini.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's a really good twist to that as well, because it's been hard to get a sense for the scale that this book is operating at, where it seems clear that, like, you know, people know about the massacre of this town, because how would that, you know, not make, like, national news? But it's been very low key in terms of, like, the antagonists feel like they're staying a little bit low. The protagonists are obviously, like, you know, trying to bait them into a trap, so also laying a little bit low, and it was hard to really get a sense of scale was. But I love that at the end it really feels like it fills in some of the texture around the antagonists and around, you know, the awful, depraved things that they do. So I thought that was a really good sort of twist to toss in at the end. And this, I agree, this series has been, like, I thought the first issue was a little mixed, but the last 2 issues have been really solid. I've been kind of getting into it, I'm a fan.
The monster slasher stuff is really fun, like, watching the bad guys kill people in creative ways. Like, the one person, like, falls out of a helicopter, gets hit by the blades, and is cut in half, and it's like, yeah, give me more of this.
Yeah, I agree, and this sort of, like, it's not silly, like, it is, the stakes are serious, but I feel like this book tends to handle the violence a little bit better than the other Cullen Bunn book this week. They're similarly well drawn, I would say. But this is, like, there is actually a threat to them, right? Comedic, even though in that way. It's good stuff, all around, I would say. I should briefly mention, I think, I don't know, I know Chad's dropped off it, but The Good Asian 4 I thought was a full issue.
I also dropped off this book.
That's a fucking shame. This book is so good.
I kept trying to get back into it, and it just, I don't know, I was having trouble following. Maybe I gave up too early and I should try again.
Yeah, I won't belabor the point, but this was a phenomenal issue. Just love the style of it. Love the increasingly getting into the characters. The one thing I will say, there's a bit at the beginning where the protagonist is having sex and he calls the woman his sister's name, which is great.
Oh, good boy stuff.
We love to see it, folks. So the, you know, family dynamic continues to complicate itself, which is very juicy in a way, but that's, you know, there's much better stuff in the book than that, but that is the thing that stuck out to me. But yeah, we should go ahead and wrap up, so that Chad doesn't spend 3 hours editing Morrow. But you can, you know, we'll be back next week with more comics and more other bullshit. Maybe somebody will tell me I'm wrong about the Suicide Squad, and tell me that James Gunn is in fact a very talented director. But until then, you can follow us online at Comics Podcast on, you know, Twitter, Facebook, that good shit. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mountain Dew Liker. Alex is at Alex Hanziak. Chad is at Inonum Band, I-N-O-N-U-M. And Emily is at Amandonata. You can find various links to other shit that we're involved in on our, you know, on our Twitters. That's a good place to look. But yeah, until next time, I enjoy the rest of whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this show.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.